Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam 8th Canto, Chapter 1, The Manus, Administrators of the Universe, Text 3.
Yat
Yasmin
Antare
Brahman
Bhagavan
Vishvabhavana
Kritavan
Kuruje
Karta
Hi
Atite
Anagate
Ajya
Ba
Yad Yasmin Nantare
Brahman
Bhagavan Vishvabhavana Kritavan Kurute
Karta
Yatite Nagate Japa
Yad
Yasmin Nantare
Brahman
Bhagavan Vishvabhavana Kritavan Kurute
Karta
Yatiteng Nagate Java Yad Yasmin Nantare.
O learned Brahmana, kindly describe to us whatever activities the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created this cosmic manifestation, has performed in the past manvantaras, is performing at present, and will perform in the future manvantaras. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said that both he and the other living entities present on the battlefield had existed in the past, they existed as present, at present, and they would continue to exist in the future. Past, present, and future always exist, both for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and for ordinary living entities. Nityo nityanam. Chaitanas chaitananam. Both the Lord and the living entities are eternal and sentient. But the difference is that the Lord is unlimited, whereas the living entities are limited. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the creator of everything. And although the living entities are not created, but exist with the Lord eternally, their bodies are created, whereas the Supreme Lord's body is never created. There is no difference between the Supreme Lord and his body. But the conditioned soul, although eternal, is different from his body.
What are you talking about there?
Om Agana Chimanandasya Gananjana Shalaka Chakshur Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Just wait till they quiet down out there.
Looks like the boss is going to have to do it, huh?
Hare Krishna. Translation again. Oh, learned Brahmana, kindly describe to us whatever activities the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created this cosmic manifestation, has performed in the past manvantaras, is performing at present, and will perform in the future manvantaras. Here in these verses, you are experiencing the eagerness of Maharaj Prichit to understand everything. What do we mean by everything? That means the spiritual energy and the material energy. When you understand those two things, then there's nothing further to be known. But please bear in mind that in order to understand the material and spiritual energy, you have to understand Krishna. How can you understand the energy without understanding the source of all the energies? In other words, if the energy is so great and wonderful, how much more wonderful is the source? So people become fascinated by this cosmic manifestation, nature, and they become fascinated by the interactions of the material energy. They don't know it, but actually they're fascinated by how spirit interacts with matter. This is actually what people call love. They don't really know it, but all they are simply relishing is how spirit moves matter. But because they don't understand spirit and don't know how to cultivate attraction for spirit, their so-called love simply has to do with matter, gross and subtle, mind and body. Actually, it is not the matter in of itself that attracts people, because no one is attracted to a dead body. No one tries to have love affairs with dead bodies. So, in other words, what they're really attracted to is how spirit is moving the matter. But they don't know anything about spirit. Therefore, they have such a frustrating life of trying to squeeze love out of matter, when actually the whole experience is because of the spirit soul present in the material body. Once you understand this, then you can be relieved of so much unnecessary labor trying to squeeze love out of the material elements. Very frustrating activity. Because Maya is there, you become inspired with false hope. Yes, I shall do it. I shall be the one who squeezes love out of matter. I shall accomplish that miracle. You see, you're not simply dealing with matter as a, how should we say, harmless substance. The matter is manipulated by the illusory energy in such a way that the matter looks like it's very promising, and it looks like it's separate from Krishna. What is the verse? Viname prakriti ashtada. The prakriti, the material energy, looks like it's separate from the Lord. It because of Maya, the matter has that appearance. Just like a reflection has the appearance of the real person. When you look in the mirror, you see a reflection of yourself. It has the appearance of you, but it's not you. Similarly, by the arrangement of Maya, the matter in this world appears to exist separately from Krishna. And it appears to be so potent and marvelous, when actually, matter without the touch of spirit can do nothing. We become captivated by the glare of material energy, as Prabhupada liked to say. Now think about that. What does it mean, the glare of the material energy? You all know what the glare of something is. Just like when you're driving on a road at night and someone has their, you call them high beams here? Their high beams, and you cannot see. They're coming towards you with their high beams on because of the glare of the headlights. Similarly, this material energy has a glare and you can't see what's really going on. You can't see the connection to Krishna. You just become mesmerized and blinded by the glare. And in that glare, we're trying to find love. But it's not possible. By manipulating matter, love is not produced. Therefore, when we fully understand how the spiritual and material energies interact, we'll know that knowledge without Krishna is incomplete. Krishna's energies are spread everywhere. Everywhere you go in the cosmos, you'll find matter and spirit. Now, once you understand that the matter and spirit are Krishna's energies, Then you know. Krishna is present everywhere and Krishna is all powerful. Just like if a government has soldiers everywhere, airplanes everywhere, ships everywhere, then people say, oh, this government is powerful, its potency is everywhere. Now Krishna has his energies everywhere. Therefore we say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not because we believe in him, not that Krishna needs our beliefs, no, but because he has things that are everywhere. Now what is it that Krishna has that's everywhere? Energies. So you have to look at yourself. What I consider mine actually belongs to Krishna. My body, my mind, my consciousness, even my spiritual identity, the spirit soul, belongs to Krishna. Just try to understand how your senses are actually Krishna's senses. That's why the Lord is called Hrishikesh. Hrishikesh, that holy name, refers to the super soul. The Lord in the heart is controlling your sense perception. So therefore, when the Lord says in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that he has his arms and legs everywhere, what does that mean? It means all the living entities, arms and legs everywhere, are actually belonging to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he can say, I have arms and legs everywhere. Just like someone who owns a store with many branches, a chain store with many branches, can say, I have stores everywhere. I have offices everywhere, branch offices all over the world. So Krishna can say, I have arms and legs everywhere because the arms and legs of the living entities are his. Now, in Maya, we don't think like that. We think, these are my arms, my legs. And why do we think like that? Because we want to use these implements for our own pleasure plans. And this is where the suffering comes from. We are endeavoring for our own pleasure in this world. And we reject Krishna's plan. And therefore we suffer. But while trying to accomplish our own purposes, and while rejecting Krishna's plan, we're looking for love. And where do we look for the love? In matter. We look for appealing arrangements of gross matter and subtle matter. And we forget that simply because of the presence of the spirit soul, the gross and subtle matter looks attractive. Now, when we look at Krishna's body, we find something else. When you look at the body of the Supreme Lord, you're not looking at an arrangement of gross and subtle matter. You're not looking at a material body that's empowered by the presence of the spirit soul. No. When you look at Krishna's body, you are seeing complete spirit without matter. This is hard for people to understand how there can be form, how there can be a body without matter. But this point is essential in understanding Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What does the Lord say in Bhagavad Gita? Ajopi sanavyatma bhutanam pisan. First of all, Krishna says, Ajopi san. I'm unborn. I'm the Lord of all living entities. But I can still appear within this material world and not have a material body. I don't lose my qualifications when I appear in the material world. Yes, it's true, I'm unborn. I'm inexhaustible. And the Lord of all sentient beings. All that is true. But that doesn't mean I can't come to the material world and do things and accomplish my sweet purposes. So I do that. Even though I have these qualifications, I can still appear in the material world in my original transcendental form. A body that is not exhaustible. That's the dream of a materialist, to have a body that's not exhaustible. Because what destroys all your enjoyment is the fact that the body gets weary, it breaks down, it gets hurt, it dies, it gets sick. That destroys all your attempts at pleasure. Just imagine what it would be like to have a body that's inexhaustible. No fatigue, no sickness. Then you could enjoy. So how can you blame Krishna when he says in Bhagavad Gita that dukkhalayam ashashvatam, this material world's temporary misery? How can you blame him? If you have a body that's exhaustible, there cannot be happiness with that body. Just see, just catch yourself and see how you have these plans and hopes to enjoy something that will become exhausted. That's the hope that's driving you on. You can be in your teens. Anyone in teens here? Yes. Donna, are you still in your teens? Yes. Okay. So, when you're a teenager, you're filled with hopes. Now you have to analyze if you're a smart teenager. It's not easy to be smart when you're a teenager. So, if you're a smart teenager, analyze and see how much of your future plans are based on the body which will become exhausted. Even as a teenager, you can experience that this body won't let you do all the things you want. Playing sports or whatever. Going to parties even. How long can your bodily strength last? The teenagers today, they take ecstasy so they can dance all night. Then what happens when the night ends? Body is finished. Even the drugs can only sustain their energy for a limited time. Then they have, I've been told. After they stay up all night with ecstasy, dancing to techno music, you know, all night. Then around 6 or 7 o'clock, they have what's called the after party, where everybody goes at 6 or 7 o'clock and just crashes out. It's called the after party. They can't admit that, you know, they're wasted and finished. So, you know, to give it, you know, an exotic appeal and, you know, to maintain the pride and false ego, you call it the after party. When actually all that's going on is everybody just, you know, crashes out. It's the after party. So, you're playing sports as a teenager, your energies are limited. You can dream in your mind how you're going to do this and do that. You'll be the star of your team, but the body can only do so much. And when you become an adult also, then you have plans how to make money. Because you need to have your house, your cars, your home, gadgets, your traveling. Then you want to produce some children who will also fulfill your dreams. But you have limited energy. How much can you do? While you're pursuing all these things, your body is breaking down. All we have in material life is really a dream that my body will make me happy. And you can envision a whole foolish future based on the dreams for this body. But it can't be done. You can't find happiness with something that is exhaustible. The body will always let you down. But still we have this vision. I shall be happy. I shall find love. I shall find pleasure. You will find it, but not based on the material body. Pleasure and love is found in understanding Krishna, because Krishna doesn't have a body with limitations. So we are body conscious in Krishna consciousness. But whose body? We are meditating on bodily form and individuality and personality. But whose form, whose body, whose individuality, whose personality? Krishna's. Why? Because we're sectarian, because we're dogmatic, because we like mythology, or what? Why are we concerned with Krishna? Because he has a body that's inexhaustible and unlimited. So, it's all right to be body conscious, but we have to understand whose body we should be conscious of. In Krishna consciousness, we are the most body conscious. But whose body? We love Krishna's bodily affairs. Sometimes, you know, non-devotees accuse us of being anti-body. You're always blaspheming the body. You're always offending the material body. Didn't God give us these bodies to enjoy? It's like you go to a prison and the prisoners tell you, didn't the government give us this prison to enjoy? No. The government gave you the prison because, you know, you had broken the law. Similarly, these material bodies are evidence that we broke the law. I always say, you can look in the mirror when you wake up in the morning, and if you see a material body, you know in your past life you made a big mistake. You've got a limited machine, an exhaustible machine, and you have unlimited desires. Therefore, you have a problem. You're trying through a limited mechanism to achieve unlimited desires. And then you wonder why you're frustrated. But still, everyone holds on to their dreams. I've got to follow that dream wherever it leads me. Where will it lead you? To different species of life. You ever look at other creatures and imagine what would it be like to be one of them? Ever do that? They have a good zoo in Perth? What? As good as Melbourne? Or better?
Oh.
Not as big, meaning less animals?
Just what's there.
Oh, but same number of animals. That is a classic Moni Bunda answer. Only Moni Bunda can say something that was a straight face. I mean it seriously. Without... Oh, gee, Maharaj, I've never counted. Reminds me of devotees, they have their different wonderful personalities. I was on the roof of the Brahmachari Ashram in Mayapur. It's about a 5-story building, I think. Subhag Swami and I were staying there. And at that time, they were still finishing the samadhi. And they had just finished, actually. But the samadhi still had scaffolding around the dome, you know. And so I was just wondering out loud to Subhag Swami. I said, well, how is anybody going to get up to that dome and get the scaffolding down? You know, typical, you know, Western mind inquiry and analysis. You know, look at that scaffolding high on the dome of the samadhi. How are they going to get it down? And, you know, that's, you know, normal way that someone born in the West will analyze something. Now, what was Subhag Swami's reaction? He showed the Eastern mentality, you know, which is totally non-speculative. When I said that, well, how did he get that scaffolding down? He just looked at me and said, those who have put it up, they will know how to bring it down. My mouth just dropped. Yeah, I guess so. So, when you think about it, the dialogue was full of profound meaning, you know. In other words, he would never worry about that. He just, those who put it up, they will know how to bring it down. Why should I worry about it? So this is the difference between the ascending and descending process. Varohapanta and avarohapanta. Western materialists can't understand why we don't have this aggressive, speculative attitude, and we're just listening to Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. You've got a mind. You know, challenge, doubt, speculate, interpret, concoct. That's what it's all about. And we're saying no. We're just wanting to listen to Shukadeva Goswami tell it like it is. And we're relishing Prichit Maharaj's submissive attitude. They can't understand how the attitude of Prichit Maharaj is allowing him to assimilate the subject matter, and it's also causing Shukadeva Goswami to speak more because of Pritchett Maharaj's eagerness. You see, bhakti is a very emotional thing. It's not that hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is devoid of emotion and personality. No. Hearing is an emotional experience. And therefore, Pritchett Maharaj is eagerly asking Shukadeva Goswami, tell me more, tell me more. And this emotional eagerness of Pritchett Maharaj is inspiring Shukadeva Goswami. So you have interaction of emotions here. The eagerness of the hearer causes the speaker to want to speak more. So you always have to keep in mind how personal and emotional Srimad Bhagavatam is. But it's dealing with perfect, purified emotions. So, how does Pritchett Maharaj talk with Shukadeva Goswami? It's very instructive for us. First of all, he gives Shukadeva Goswami credit for what the Guru has already done. Oh, my Lord, my spiritual master, now I have fully heard from your grace about the dynasty of Swayambhuva Manu. In other words, you've already done that. You've already told me these things. I give you full credit. But there's also some other things. There are also other Manus, and I want to hear about their dynasties. Kindly describe them to us. He's revealing, Pritchett Maharaj revealing his appetite. It's just more and more. He's saying, in other words, Shukadeva Goswami, it's not that you haven't done your duty, but it's just that because you've done your duty so well, I have to hear more. You've stimulated my appetite. So it's not that you have failed in your attempts to give Krishna Katha, but you've done the job so well that I want more and more and more. Then, the next verse he said, O learned Brahmana, the great learned persons who are completely intelligent describe the activities and appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead during the various manvantaras. This is a backhanded way of complimenting Shukadeva Goswami. Pritchett Maharaj is describing the activities of the persons who are greatly learned and completely intelligent. What do they do? They describe the activities and appearances of the Supreme Lord. Well, Shukadeva Goswami is doing that. So this is Pritchett Maharaj's indirect way of complimenting Shukadeva Goswami. This is art, you see. How to glorify someone directly and indirectly. Because if you do it all the time directly, they may kind of, you know, well, okay, enough's enough. But then you start doing it indirectly. Just like if we say, the person who cooks for the temple is doing so nicely. Okay, that's a direct kind of compliment. But then you can switch and do it indirectly. Those persons who cook for the temple are very, very wonderful persons. It's the same thing, but it's indirect. This is all art. Vedic culture is very sensitive, artistic. They have to be able to see these things in the Bhagavatam. We're so used to, you know, the barbarian culture. Hey, mate, how you doing? How you going? Good on you. You know, that's how we think personal relationships, you know, what's it all about. But here, in the Bhagavatam, you learn the height of personal dealings. How to resonate with people. So, Pritchett Maharaj is doing that. He's complimenting Shukadeva Goswami directly and also indirectly. He's describing the function of Shukadeva Goswami in a generic way. The great learned persons, what do? They describe the activities of the Lord. These great learned persons who are completely intelligent. Well, that's what Shukadeva Goswami is doing. So the shoe does fit. And then Pritchett Maharaj reveals his eagerness. I am very eager to hear more about these narrations. Kindly describe them. You see, Pritchett Maharaj knows the price to pay. Intense eagerness. Rupa Goswami says, actually, that's the only price for becoming Krishna conscious. Lolyam, intense greed. Tatra lolyam ikalam mulyam. No other price. But that intense greed for Krishna is like no greed experienced in the material world. Sometimes, you know, as immature devotees, we really think, I'm so eager to become Krishna conscious. Actually, it takes a while for a real eagerness to develop. There's nothing like it in the material world. The greed for Krishna that the advanced devotees have is nothing like any greed experienced in the material world. The greed you experience in the material world is just a tiny shadow indication of what real greed is all about. Everyone knows what it's like to be greedy in the material world, yes? I don't know what you've been greedy for, you don't have to say, but so everyone knows what it's like to be greedy when you just want to pig out with your senses. That's considered a great virtue today. If you tell people, you know, well, I had a great weekend, I just pigged out the whole weekend. Wow, good, very good. How advanced. Is that the way it is? You had a successful weekend. Invite me next time. Right? It's considered the height of achievement to pig out. Go on a holiday, go on a trip, and pig out. That means people are glorifying greed. But they have no idea. The greed for attaining Krishna far surpasses anything that they know about as greed. So Rupa Goswami says that unfathomable greed, which is the product of spiritual development, that's the only price to pay for Krishna. So this is what we're actually doing here in our centers for Krishna consciousness, our devotional communities. We are trying to develop proper greed. And therefore we have our rules and regulations which are meant to keep you from cultivating false greed. Now the rules and regulations are not there to repress you. They're there to help you develop real greed. And therefore the rules and regulations keep away the false greed. So we do want greedy devotees. Krishna consciousness is dynamic. But you shouldn't take it to be impersonal or inactive. Now that I'm not having sense gratification, I don't know what to do with myself. Okay, I'll go to the temple. Yeah, I'll do some service. What do you want me to do this week? I'm ready to do my one task for the week. Okay, is this, any interesting gossip going on out here? All right, you know, I heard the Bhagavatam class, you know, so that was enough for me. That's enough Krishna Katha now. Who's got the gossip? You know, I gotta do something that kind of interests me, you know. I paid my dues, you know. I even chanted my rounds today, you know, I paid my dues. Now I want some variegated enjoyment. We shouldn't make Krishna consciousness like that. We should understand that all our personal desires will be fulfilled in bhakti yoga. Far more than we could ever conceive. Far more than anything. Any false fulfillment that can happen in the material world. Krishna is the expert lover. What does it mean to be an expert lover? It means to be a master of fulfilling desires. You dream of that in the material world, but you never get. The women dream, there'll be Mr. Right, he'll be a master fulfilling my desires. And the men, you know, the male dream, yes, there'll be a woman who just knows exactly what I want at every moment. Isn't that the male dream? She'll know how to soothe my every ache and pain, even before I feel the pain. Isn't that the male dream? Yes. Can't be done. Sorry. It's a false hope. But Krishna is unlimitedly expert to do that. Yes. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not simply because he's the creator, the maintainer, or the destroyer. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he is expert at fulfilling desires. That's his specialty. When we understand that about the Lord and trust Krishna, Then things start to open up for us. We stop seeing Krishna consciousness as some cold mechanical being, almost like it's our enemy. All right, you gotta come to Krishna consciousness when you've suffered. Yeah, it does you some good for a while to get yourself back together. Sadhana bhakti, yeah, when you've burned out, sadhana is good, you know. When you've burned out in the material world, then, you know, it's nice to have some sadhana for a while to, you know, get you back in shape. But then, after a while, you've got to be yourself, you know. You've got to kind of, you know, blossom again. You shouldn't be afraid of that. But the problem is the devotees, they don't understand that sadhana is good for you when you're in the beginning, when you're a burnout case. But after some years, you know, you've got to, you know, open up again. You've got to, you know, follow your dreams. But the devotees don't understand that. They want you to be the same as when you first came to Krishna consciousness. You know, they don't understand. And now, you know, it's time for something else. Now, if they would just, you know, relax and allow that, and we would have a healthy, you know, Krishna conscious community full of persons spaced out on material desires. No, this is not going to work. To advance in Krishna consciousness, we have to understand that it is Krishna who is the expert lover, and Krishna is the expert lover because he fulfills desires perfectly. It's a very important point. Krishna can perfectly reciprocate your love. You should be interested in that. Someone who can perfectly reciprocate your love. Yes, that's what I want. All the spirit souls want that. But you look for that perfect fulfillment in matter. What a joke. You're going to be so foolish. Look for perfect reciprocation in arrangements of matter. Gross and subtle. The matter is only looking attractive because the spirit soul is present. You take the spirit soul away from matter, what can it do for you? It's like, I don't know if you experienced, someone who has a beautiful house with all the mod cons inside, luxurious carpets and furniture and home entertainment systems, but that person is alone, lives in the house alone. You ever been to such a house? Yeah, and it's like, it's just, something's missing. It's no matter, regardless of all the beautiful furniture and appliances and conveniences, it takes personal relationships to bring all that to life. And in fact, the person who's alone is always thinking like that. Oh, if there could be somebody else in this house with me to bring all these things I have to life. That's how people feel. I remember, I can reminisce a little bit. When I was young, I used to, growing up in New York, I used to always go to all the best concerts. Living in New York, you got to see all the best. You know, I didn't go to the ordinary concerts of the masses. You know, I went to the avant-garde, you know, super creative, cutting-edge musicians. So I would see these incredible concerts from the material point of view. But I was always alone. Because, I don't know, why was I always alone to go to those guys? I think I was too discriminating. So, I would always find out where these great concerts were, where these great musicians would play, and I would go myself. And then while I was there, I would always, oh, if there was only somebody else here who could experience this glorious moment. All this musical creativity going on. I'm seeing it. But, you know, I'm alone. If there's only somebody else who would also be here and so we could experience this magic moment together. But, of course, everything is controlled by karma. You may think that you are independently arranging your material sense gratification, but the laws of karma, they allow you a certain amount and no more. So, under the laws of karma, I could enjoy the most incredible concerts by the greatest names, but not with somebody else. It's karma. Reminds me of, I don't know what he's doing now, but one of your second generation devotees here in Perth. He was, at the time, I think he was about 19 or 20. So, some years ago, he was telling me, there's just, I don't mind the regular principles, he said, but there's just one regular principle I gotta break. it's just got to be done, there's certain things a young man has to do, and so, I don't mind admitting, he said, it's gotta happen. So I was looking at him, and I was wondering, the guy's kind of handsome and debonair, he's, I imagine what young ladies would think. He's kind of cool and, like that. And in Australia, we all know that, this kind of activity flows like water. What could be the difficulty, especially if you're kind of a, handsome-looking guy or kind of, sensitive-looking guy. And the ladies like that, they're very sensitive and caring, they like that. So, at the same time, you got a bit of brute strength to you. So, what's the problem with this guy, It's, what he's after is flowing like water. So I just assumed, he'll get into all that. Then I talked to him a year or two later, and still he had the same anxiety. It's just not happening. I just can't connect. I can understand. This is karma. It wasn't in his cards. I don't know what he's doing now, but at least at that time it wasn't in his cards to enjoy his senses. But he was trying so hard. It wasn't happening. So this shows you that these things are not under our control. We hope to have someone to enjoy with, but the illusory hopes are attempted within the field of karma. Everything is rigged. Still, the point is, you want to relish things in the association of someone else. Isn't that everyone's marriage hope? Yes. You hope that when you marry together, you both will be able to relish. You'll go to Mayapur together. You'll take the Sunday feast together. You'll talk about the other devotees together. Isn't that the hope? You're hoping that there'll be a sweeter taste in Krishna consciousness because you're together. Whereas when you were a brahmachari, you were lonely. Because brahmacharis don't talk to each other. especially when you're a brahmacharini. Oh my God. No way that single ladies are going to talk to each other for long. But your hope is that when you marry, by that male-female combination, there'll be an ocean of nectar to churn. Well, that's just the way it is, right? Everyone knows. Yes? You're hoping. And there'll be something added to your life. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. You're hoping there's going to be something added to your life. You're hoping there's going to be taste added to your life. Of course, you look at the older householders, and they can tell you that we're doing our duty. But the young ones, they have this dream. There's going to be that taste. There's going to be an ocean of nectar churned. Our life will become more full. So therefore, we need that the younger householders and householders-to-be take advice from the older ones. Otherwise, why try to reinvent the wheel every year, searching for this ocean of nectar that you're going to churn? It's going to add all the missing ingredients to your life. All the things you were lacking in the brahmacharya, brahmacharini ashram, and suddenly going to come together. Just because of the combination of the male devotee and the female devotee, all those missing rasas are going to be there. And then you'll be able to prosecute Krishna consciousness. All right. Most persons, it's a fact, they need a chance to pursue this dream. That's all right. But still, we have to discuss it. It is simply a dream. And sooner or later, the older householders, they'll tell you, sooner or later you realize that it's duty that makes the thing work. But in the beginning, you don't want to hear about duty. You want to hear about, you know, reciprocation and churning the ocean and, you know, producing all the flavors that we didn't get when we were single. That's what you want to hear about. And you want to dream. Both the ladies and the men, they like to dream. The ladies have their dream. He will be so caring for me. He will be so considerate of me. He'll want me to talk to him night and day. Forget. Isn't that the hope? He's gonna want to listen to me night and day. He's marrying me because he loves the way I talk all the time. You ask any married man what the thing that he has the most difficulty with, and they always say, "She just talks too much." They all say that, you know. I hear it all the time. You know, the one thing I missed when I was a brahmachari was I didn't have somebody talking to me all the time. I had a quiet life. See, the men have this illusion that it's all going to be measured. Yeah, I'll have to, you know, tolerate a bit of, you know, conversation, but, you know, it's all well and good for, you know, for the overall purpose. And, yeah. The men think like that. They have no idea what they're jumping into. They have no idea that, you know, they just kind of, yeah, they're signing up for what appears to be an eternal conversation, you know. And it's not with Krishna. They don't understand. They have just designated themselves as a conversation partner. Now, this is hard for a man to think of himself as a conversation partner. But it's very important for the ladies, right? Yeah, you know, come on. You got to listen, you got to talk. And if you don't, oh, big problems. Big problems. If you think you're just going to be at home and, you know, and just, you know, keep your mouth shut and keep your ears closed, forget it. Was it one older householder, his very expert householder, Srivas, the temple president of Los Angeles, he told me, you know, the common mistake that single men make. He said, if they think they're going to marry and just talk to their wife a half hour a day, they just made their first mistake. So they've just made their... They've already started off wrong. Many men think like that. Yeah, yeah, we married and... Yeah, I'll talk to her. I mean, of course, you know what you think I am. I understand what has to be done. And, well, you know, I'll talk to her a half hour a day. That'll be enough. And I'll go about my affairs with the boys, you know. It'll be, you know, basically, I'll be the same person. They all say like that. All the men say that. Yeah, basically, it'll be the same thing. Yeah, just, you know, I'll talk to her a half hour, enough, you know. And you know, I'll go do my service or do my job, whatever I'm doing. Oh, I remember Savas telling me very dramatically, you've just made your first mistake when you think like that. So you don't understand. You are signing up for round-the-clock conversation. And it's going to take you many years to learn how to cope with that. So the whole point is that we are looking for fulfillment of tastes and desires. And sometimes we forget, we don't know, that Krishna is the only one capable of fulfilling these desires. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not simply because he creates, maintains, and destroys, but because he can most perfectly reciprocate your love. That's what it's all about. You want perfect reciprocation of your love. And Krishna can do that in five basic ways, the five basic rasas, and seven indirect ways, the seven secondary rasas. He doesn't even do it just one way. There's so many different flavors of ways that Krishna can do it. Bhakti yoga means to increase your confidence in Krishna, that he can perfectly reciprocate your love. That's what bhakti yoga is about. It's not about repression and impersonalism and unfulfillment. Doing devotional service, there's no appreciation, there's no reward. Sadhana, you just do it when you come into the temple as a burnout case. No. Sadhana bhakti is about becoming eligible to perfectly reciprocate love with Krishna, because Krishna has that ability and the Lord can empower you to reciprocate love with him. Just like Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva Maharaj got darshan of the Supreme Lord, Dhruva Maharaj didn't know what to say, how to glorify the Lord. And the Lord touched Dhruva Maharaj with his conch shell to the head of Dhruva Maharaj, and then Dhruva Maharaj became empowered to offer wonderful prayers. So Krishna will empower you to reciprocate love with him. The Lord is already the perfect lover, and he empowers his devotee how to have perfect exchanges with him. So what more can you want? All right. Any questions? That means we need help from the association of devotees to see what we're getting. We're very hard-hearted in Kali Yuga and so quick to be down on someone, even Krishna. We have very little patience. But patience is a part of love. Even in ordinary relationships, without patience, how can the love actually manifest in the ordinary sense? Someone that you care for, you're willing to undergo a bit of inconvenience for. To see Krishna's care takes qualification. That care is there even for the beginning devotee. In order to appreciate that care, you have to understand what Krishna wants, and then you'll see his care. But we're too caught up in what we want, and many times our desires don't match Krishna's desires, and we wonder, well, where's Krishna? I mean, like, you know, why isn't he supporting my program? Oh, maybe Krishna has his own program. This is the problem in Bhagavad Gita with Arjuna. I don't want to fight. How can I get any happiness by fighting relatives and friends? But Krishna wasn't supporting his program. We have to see what Krishna wants. Anything else? Mm-hmm.
We were discussing about the greed for people. We can really understand, because it doesn't have any comparison to what we experience in the world. So how can we develop that?
The whole process of bhakti yoga is meant to develop eagerness for Krishna. Everything we're doing. The more you put yourself into the bhakti process, the more the greed develops. You have to invest of yourself. Just like in an ordinary relationship, you've got to put yourself into it. Similarly, in bhakti yoga, which is relationship to Krishna, you have to invest of yourself. Put your energies, put your time. Then things start to work. I'm sure you've all noticed that. You just kind of hang back, you know, and then you get a little Krishna consciousness, but not so much. Kind of hang back at the edges, you know, watching and being very careful about how much, you know, you sacrifice for Krishna. Oh, I've talked to some other devotees. They've told me, don't give too much. You get burned out. Watch it. You could be doing too much service. Thank you. Give you a long list of the ill effects of too much devotional service, as if that's the real problem. Rarely you'll find that there are problems because devotees are trying to do too much. Generally it would be the other way. Almost always it's the problem that devotees aren't investing enough of themselves in bhakti yoga. So if you want your temple community to be successful, you have to have some persons who demonstrate the joy of investing yourself in devotional service. We need brahmacharis and brahmacharinis who can demonstrate that. You need householders who can demonstrate that. Even those who are in the in-between categories, I call them the contemporary Vedic ashrams, the single men who are not brahmachari or married yet. They can demonstrate sacrifice. Then bhakti comes alive before your eyes. And that's what you all want to see. You want to see bhakti come alive in your presence. That's the impressive beauty about this world, is when bhakti comes alive. Yes? Give me an example of how you speculate. Well, if there's some doubt, you ask the person who gave the instruction. Then be prepared to be corrected. My basic point is that the things that you have to do in an ordinary relationship, why can't you do for Krishna's pleasure? In an ordinary relationship, you have to refine your understanding constantly. Oh, did you really mean that? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant such and such. But constantly it's like that, yeah? So why can't we do that for Krishna's service? Constantly refine our understanding. That takes good association, good guidance. It's an ongoing thing. It's not just, okay, I've mastered it all, nothing else, no other instructions required. Anything else? Yes?
You see, if bhakti comes alive, that would be another when bhakti comes alive.
You really want to know the answer? Well, then we have to discuss your investment. That's how you can know. You have to invest. Then you'll get returns on your, you'll get yield on your investment. But still, even before you invest, you'll be able to see it to some degree in others. See, bhakti is a little tricky in that unless you're somewhat Krishna conscious, you can't really detect what is Krishna consciousness in others. This is the ultimate catch about recognizing who's a pure devotee. Ultimately, the only proof is you become one. It takes purity to see purity. You know, sometimes little kids play, and I don't know if they do it here, but I remember when I was a little kid, you know, another little kid would insult you, you're an idiot. And then what would you reply? You know, it takes one to know. And did I do that here? So, in Krishna consciousness, that's true. Ultimately, if you want to know who is a pure devotee, you have to become a pure devotee, because it takes purity to recognize purity. In any case, because that's the ultimate proof, but in any case, there are some things that you can recognize about when bhakti is alive. You'll see sacrifice, a spirit of sacrifice. You'll see persons going beyond what they would normally do for the pleasure. They'll do that for the pleasure of Krishna. So when persons look at the temple community, they should be able to see that. All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.